It was July of 1987, on a hot, muggy Thursday in New York City. Temperatures had been climbing into the 90s all week. And as people all over the city ran fans in their windows, wrapped wet towels around their necks, and hit the beach, a 34-year-old man named Alan Weiner from Yonkers was out on the water, on a ship, a 200-foot-long freighter.
And it's not a gleaming clipper ship, but a broken-down bucket which has drawn the attention of the federal government.
It drew the Fed's attention because of what was happening on board.
There's a new rock station in town. Well, not really in town, really in the water. And it may be illegal.
Alan was a tech-savvy hippie with round glasses and a long bowl cut in the style of Johnny Ramone. And together with his comrades, Alan had launched a pirate radio station.
I mean, the only people that have radio stations in New York are gigantic corporations. This is the only other way to do it, especially if you don't have much coin.
This was not Alan Weiner's first time hijacking the airwaves. He'd been illegally broadcasting for half his life, first getting a knock on the door from the FCC when he was just a teenager. But this was by far his most ambitious effort.
Radio New York International, they call themselves, with a rock and roll accent and a pacifist beat.
With the stated goal of spreading peace, love, and understanding, and some good old American rock music, Radio New York International broadcast for listeners up and down the East Coast, and artists sent in records for them to play on the air.
All right, that's the Ramones here at R&I, Radio New York International.
As for the news media, they pulled out all the stops to cover the story.
Channel 5 News has spared no expense in tracking down these pirates. We've added this vessel to our investigative fleet. It's a duplicate of the one used on Miami Vice. With us is our captain, Fred Shaw. Fred.
From their first broadcast, Radio New York International taunted the Federal Communications Commission, kicking off their transmission with a topical song from the 1960s.
Come on down to my boat, baby.
But after only four broadcast days, just as Alan and his first mate were starting to get their sea legs...
Good evening. Some defiant DJs who wanted to thumb their noses at Washington have instead gotten an FCC fist in the face.
Federal agents did come on down to their boat.
Shortly before 5:30 this morning, the Coast Guard and FCC engineers moved in. The FCC dismantled the radio equipment, and the Coast Guard arrested the two RNI staffers on board, Ivan Rothstein and Alan Weiner.
Alan was incensed as they took him off the ship in bracelets.
We weren't breaking any laws whatsoever. We feel we were completely illegal station, and now free-form rock and roll has been stuffed out.
They had anchored the boat just over 4 miles off the coast of Long Island, which, per Alan's interpretation of the law, was international waters. But the government said that international waters started much further out.
Weiner and another man have now been charged with illegally broadcasting rock and roll music and peace chatter.
Radio New York International was dead.
The men who wanted your ears were chained, taken away, and could spend years in jail. You know how many robberies there were in this town last year? Murders, burglaries, but two pirate DJs won't bother you anymore.
Alan ended up avoiding jail time for this stunt, in part thanks to the ACLU coming to his defense. But after years of trying to skirt around the FCC, this arrest did change something for Alan. It made him realize that if he wanted to get on the air for good, he'd have to go legit. Alan set out to get his own licensed station. The FCC dragged its feet for years, saying in the official record that it didn't want to give a license to Captain Hook. But in the late 1990s, what many people in the radio business consider to be the impossible happened. Alan, the pirate, won. And in 1998, he launched WBCQ.
The free speech sound, heard the whole world round. WBCQ, you're on the planet.
It wasn't in the coveted, corporatized market of New York City. It was in the 800-person, blink-and-you'll-miss-it town of Monticello in far northern Maine. That was all right, though, because Alan wasn't going for a local audience. He was going to use the shortwaves to bring the free-form, peace-and-love mission of his pirate ship out to the world. This is season 2 of The Divided Dial from On the Media. I'm your host, Katie Thornton. This season is all about shortwave radio, how it went from a utopian experiment in global communication to a tool of government and far-right propaganda, and what a little-known battle playing out on the shortwaves today means for the future of our public airwaves. This episode, the story of one station and one man that tells us a lot about shortwave in the internet era. Last episode, we learned how shortwave took a hit when the internet came around. Lots of stations closed, but WBCQ was just getting started. Today, it's one of the highest-powered, privately-owned broadcasting facilities on Earth. So how did Alan Weiner pull it off? The answer has to do with an absolutely giant antenna that reaches every continent. And how that antenna came to be up there in rural Maine, and what it broadcasts? That was one of the most unexpected stories I dug up on my journey into the shortwaves. Because at WBCQ today, it's not all peace and love, man. Far from it.
Hello.
Early last year, I reached out to Alan Weiner.
Hi, Alan. It's Katie calling.
Hello, Katie.
And he mentioned that he and some of his engineering buddies would be gathering for last April's solar eclipse, which happened to pass directly over WBCQ. Offhandedly, he invited me along.
Yeah, sure. Come on up. You can't miss the station. It's got a ginormous antenna.
Other than a friend of mine who told me about the station, no one I knew had ever even heard of WBCQ. And I know a lot of radio freaks. I really wanted to know more. So I took Alan up on his offer.
It's 1 mile ahead, 2 miles ahead, and 1 mile right. So if I look north-northeast, I should see the tower.
Turn right onto Britain Road.
Okay. Holy shit. Well, he was not lying when he said you can't miss it. One of, if not the most powerful commercial broadcast stations in the world. No one's ever heard of it. No one even knows it's here. And I am closing in on it.
Now, during totality, I'll remove the solar filter from the telescope. You can look at it in totality without the filter.
When I arrived at the station, Alan was there with his wife Angela, some friends, a farmer neighbor, and the station's engineer. They were warm and friendly. They'd lugged an assortment of wooden and plastic chairs out to the station's small parking lot and had an extra ready for me. They offered me sunscreen and eclipse-proof glasses.
Yeah, we got 55.
Ooh.
It was brisk. There was snow on the ground, but the skies were this perfect blue.
3 minutes.
Oh, there's barely anything left.
Whoa. It's a pinhole sun.
Yeah.
Pinhole sun.
Rest in peace.
Chris Cornell, what a beautiful man.
At one point, as it started to get darker, the automatic floodlights came on in the parking lot where we sat.
Oh, look, the lights just come on.
Oh, shit. Yeah, turn them off, would you?
Yeah. Oops.
That was the sound of a station employee's handgun falling to the ground out of his back pocket when he got up to turn the lights off. One of the guys who came up for the big event was named Tim. He has a long-running weekly show on WBCQ, playing mostly rock and roll, sprinkled in with some funny skits and stories. Like Alan, he had long gray hair, though Tim's was notably more unkempt. And also like Alan, Tim got his start in pirate radio. A long time ago.
I was with my buddy and thought, hey, why not? Each of us popped a tab of acid. Now we're starting to trip our brains off. So I ran next door and I grabbed a bunch of records and other stuff and a reel-to-reel tape machine and patch cables, broadcasted on shortwave. I called it Radio Timtron Worldwide. It was just a goof.
Another friend of Alan's had been an engineer at the U.S.-based Christian Science Monitor shortwave station, which used to broadcast news and information to Eastern Europe during the Cold War.
When the Berlin Wall came down, we got quite a few letters in thanking us for broadcasting. It makes me feel like I helped tear down the Berlin Wall.
At WBCQ, I got the full range of shortwavers' aspirations. Some of them wanted to use the power of this megaphone to promote democracy. Others just to have a little fun. But for the time being, our focus was elsewhere, on the sky and the sun and the moon that was rapidly stepping into its path. Finally, the moment we'd been waiting for was here, and it was breathtaking.
You can look at it.
Oh my God. Look at that.
The eye of God.
How cool is that?
That is it.
Cool. I can't believe you can see the stars.
Yeah.
It looks like John Bonham's bass drum insignia. Yeah.
Yep, the morning after the eclipse. Just woke up in the back of the minivan in the Walmart parking lot here in Holton.
I don't know if you all know this about solar eclipses, but it's impossible to find a cheap hotel. It's impossible to find any hotel, especially all the way up here, 12 miles past the northern terminus of Interstate 95, which runs from Maine to Florida. I knew all this going into the trip, and I'd booked an RV with a heater. But it canceled on me at the last minute. So I rented a minivan from some guy in Boston and threw an air mattress in the back.
It's like 20 degrees last night. It was really cold. Made it, though. And getting ready.
I decided to go back to WBCQ because something wasn't adding up. During the eclipse, we sat in the shadow of this huge, shiny new antenna. But elsewhere on the property, radio equipment clanked away inside various trailers and falling down shacks. There were lots of old school buses and World War II-era radar devices. Alan told me he uses them to search the skies for extraterrestrial life. A massive anti-aircraft gun was parked at one of the station's driveways. That big new antenna was just so out of place with the rest of the station. I wanted to know how it all came to be. So Alan and I chatted as he showed me around.
We're a free speech radio station on shortwave, and we lease airtime to anyone.
What are you all charging?
$50 an hour. Yeah, and that's what we were charging when we went on the air.
From the time WBCQ launched in 1998, anyone could buy airtime. Buy an hour every month, every week, every day. You pay, Alan will beam it out. And that $50 an hour rate, it's kind of insanely affordable. For reference, I used to work at a small community radio station that charged $50 for a 30-second underwriting announcement. You know, those programming is supported by messages you hear. When WBCQ started, the exodus from shortwave was well underway. About a fifth of Americans were already on the internet. But despite that, there was still demand for affordable airtime. So WBCQ started adding more frequencies. This was all happening before they got the big new antenna, but the station could still reach pretty far. South America, even Antarctica. Folks bought airtime to play niche music shows, classic rock, deep cuts, even old wax cylinders and 78s. But as Alan quickly discovered, when you advertise yourself as a haven for free speech on a medium that was already home to militia leaders and extremists, that's who shows up.
The American Nazi Party. Do you know they were one of the first people to sign up with us? They came to us, oh, free speech, right on the air. I said, yep, no problem.
Alan's father was Jewish, and Alan was mostly raised Jewish, though his mother was Roman Catholic. But Alan thought of himself as a free thinker, a First Amendment warrior. And having Nazis as paying customers posed no ethical dilemmas for him. At least, not at first.
We had a programmer that kept getting on the air and telling people to go out and kill the Jews. And I kept calling him up and going, look, you can't encourage people to go out and kill people. You know, if that happens, you're going to go to jail. I'm going to go to jail. Because, you know, we'd be complicit. And you can't do this. They wouldn't listen. Even my father heard that.
Alan's father did not like tuning in and hearing Nazis.
He says, son, what are you... Yeah, I know. I'm going to fix it.
After multiple warnings about the Nazis' explicit calls for violence, Alan pulled the broadcast, citing the station's self-imposed hate speech policy.
Which basically says, if you get on the air and encourage people to go out and hurt and harm other people, we're gonna give you a warning. We're going to say, don't do that. And if they don't...
Psh. The Nazi show was called American Dissident Voices, and when Alan cut it, it caused a stir. Deep in the archives of one popular shortwave show, I found a call-in that dealt with the cancellation head-on.
We're talking about American Dissident Voices being booted off of WBCQ.
The host was Bill Cooper. He was a hugely influential thought leader in the conspiracy and militia movements of the 90s. We heard some of his show on the last episode.
Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Mike in South Florida. Good evening, Bill.
Hi, Mike.
I don't agree with the person of WBCQ because he became judge and jury with no due process.
If the radio station makes a claim that they will broadcast anybody's opinion, then they should honor that promise. I lost a lot of respect for Al Wiener by him not honoring his promise.
In Alan Wiener's case, he simply pulled the plug.
Yeah, he certainly did that.
And then...
Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill. It's Alan Wiener.
Alan called in.
Hi, Alan. Well, you know, I think a lot of people out there are glad you called. I hope you understand this is not...
Alan told listeners that he alone was responsible for the decision, but that axing the show violated every principle he held dear.
That everyone has a right to speak on the radio, and everyone should be given that right. However, I did change the way I felt on that one specific program because I did get some input from a lot of other people, and the day I decided to pull it off, I knew it was a no-win situation. And to all the listeners out there that hold me to my principles of allowing all voices on the air, I apologize and I am sorry. But in this one instance, and I plan to make it the last instance, I had to do it.
Alan did indeed make it the last instance. Hate groups kept coming to WBCQ, and Alan kept selling them airtime.
The KKK contacted us.
Alan told me about this on my visit.
And they were really pleasant and nice, and I said, sure, we'll put you on the air, and they were very, very impressed.
Maybe it was his own crystallizing free speech absolutism, or maybe it was the fact that it didn't take long for WBCQ to start feeling the economic squeeze of the internet era. But Alan was quickly entering the business of shortwave extremism. Within a few years of launching, he welcomed a guy named Hal Turner, who used the shortwaves to call for violence.
I advocate shooting and killing these Mexicans as they cross the border.
Turner also called for the murder of Jews, Black Americans, LGBTQ people, and politicians.
We don't want to have to kill you. We hope to not have to kill you. But we can kill you. And if need be, we will kill you.
Hal Turner first made a name for himself as a frequent caller to Sean Hannity's show on the big AM station WABC in New York. But Hal went to shortwave because he felt AM and FM conservative talk had grown soft. On shortwave, he said whatever he wanted.
There are approaching on the horizon situations where killing elected officials may be necessary. Well, what are a few lives in the grand scheme of liberty? Not a big deal.
But Alan's assortment of extremist talk shows and the occasional esoteric music program was far from a cash cow. Alan needed people to buy more time. He offered big discounts for hosts who bought airtime in bulk. A few, including Hal Turner, came to buy several hours most every day. At one point, Alan was even in talks with Radio Sputnik.
Is Russia, and they almost leased one of our transmitters.
To take a whole frequency, 24/7.
Yeah, what happened with those Radio Sputnik conversations?
They decided not to go. I don't know why, because we really made them a good deal, and we can see we can get people on.
One man did have a round-the-clock presence on one of WBCQ's frequencies. His name was Ralph Gordon Stair, also known as RG, also known as Brother Stair.
And I don't believe there's a man on the face of the earth that is higher in spiritual authority in the kingdom of God than I am. I don't believe that.
Stair was a self-proclaimed prophet who preached an ultra-conservative, homophobic, and misogynistic Christian ideology. He bought airtime on other shortwave stations, too. And he didn't just use his show to preach. He also used it to recruit listeners from as far away as New Zealand to live with him on his farm in South Carolina. At the farm, the men wore long beards, and the women always wore full coverage skirts and had their hair in tightly wound buns. People who visited have said that there were radios and loudspeakers set up in every one of the compound's buildings and on the fields so that followers would hear Stairs preaching even as they worked his land. Stairs' flock took a pledge of poverty when they joined, giving their money to his Overcomer ministry.
The Overcomer radio broadcast.
At one point, Stair was spending $100,000 a month on shortwave and local radio broadcasts.
Heard around the world, 7 days a week, 24 hours.
In 2017, video surfaced of Stair molesting a 12-year-old girl during a sermon. More women came forward with reports of abuse. Stories and court cases from years prior came to light, alleging everything from fraud to the improper burial of babies who died, apparently after Stair encouraged mothers to forego modern medical care in favor of faith healing.
You're dealing with a doctor. He won't tell you the truth. You better get away from him.
Multiple people who escaped the Overcomer ministry said R.G. Stair was running a cult. Thanks to survivors who spoke out, the FBI and local law enforcement investigated Stair. And later that year, they raided the farm.
More victims brought their stories to police. Stair facing more charges of criminal sexual conduct this time, many involving children.
Stair's show was dropped from a bunch of local stations, but in Alan and his wife Angela's eyes, he still had a right to the airwaves. And yeah, Stair bought lots of time on WBCQ, but it wasn't like he was making the station rich. Alan still couldn't always afford to repair or maintain equipment. He'd let go of staff.
You know, the $50 we get here and there, you know, that doesn't pay the bills.
No.
It doesn't.
For WBCQ and a lot of shortwave stations that survived into the internet era, this was the play. Offering a megaphone to religious extremists and the far right, while still barely scraping by. But in 2018, everything changed at WBCQ. Coming up, Alan gets a huge leg up and that powerful new antenna from an unexpected source. This is season two of The Divided Dial from On the Media. This is The Divided Dial from On the Media. I'm Katie Thornton. Right before the break, I was telling you about how WBCQ was struggling financially. But in 2018, that all changed.
That summer was great.
WBCQ got a many-million-dollar cash injection and that massive new antenna. It can pump out 500 kilowatts of power, 10 times as much as WBCQ's other signals. The town's electric system wasn't even powerful enough to support it, so Alan offered to split the cost of rewiring with the local government.
They're rewiring the town. You know, I'd walk into the town office. Well, thank you. You know, we're getting all new power, you know, here for business and stuff. Thank you so much. You know, you're welcome. You're welcome.
The antenna weighs 200 tons and is gigantic at its base. Like one of those redwood trees that you can drive through. Except the electromagnetic frequencies this beast emits are known to jam up cars' computer systems and stall them out, so you can't drive even near it. To anchor the antenna, they had to get a host of cement trucks to come in and put a footing down, 40 by 40 feet wide and 12 solid feet deep. The antenna is fully rotatable, sitting on a gargantuan ring bearing that can be turned to point in any direction, beaming shortwave radio signals to any continent on Earth.
Oh, I hear the motors.
There it goes.
Oh, there it goes. There it goes. Quite something.
That's wild. Oh my goodness. It's like watching a skyscraper spin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but listen to it. It's like a fine watch. They're going to the UK now.
I think this is the only privately owned 500 kilowatter in the world. Because most of the 500 kilowatters that I know are either owned by the Catholic Church, the Vatican, or governments. By the time we got done with it, it cost about $8 million. Was it $8 million? Yeah, I think it was $8 million.
Wow. Sure. You know, so I think this...
When the windfall came, WBCQ also got a bespoke news studio and transmitter building, outfitted with an apartment for a live-in engineer. People in the shortwave world had one question. Who paid for this? I mean, how did WBCQ, with their transmitters in falling-down shacks and broadcast studio in a single-wide trailer, become a swanky, world-class, enormously high-powered shortwave station? It turns out Alan's new backer was a group called World's Last Chance.
This is WBCQ, bringing World's Last Chance Radio to you from Monticello, Maine, USA.
They're an ultra-conservative Christian end times ministry, and they preach, among other things, that the earth is flat.
We are talking flat earth in the Bible. The earth is flat and God tells you so.
World's Last Chance was started in 2004 by an Egyptian cosmetics and food magnate turned religious leader named Galal Doss. At first, even Alan didn't think World's Last Chance was on the level.
They came to us, but they wanted superpower. We really want to be with your station because you're free speech. I said, well, we can get you on the air. It's 50 kilowatts, blah, blah, blah. I said, no, we don't want that. We want more power. I said, well, how much more power? So, you know, at least 500,000 watts. I said, we'd have to build that and, you know, we'd have to charge you for it and all that. You know, I mean, that's millions of dollars, you know. I mean, they said, fine. Well, that afternoon, they wired me $30,000. I said, okay, these people are serious.
Some of what the ministry preaches is just downright strange.
Final events.
Or really in the weeds about doctrine.
Cosmologies and cosmogonies.
Scholars have always known the truth, but it's been hidden.
For a while, World's Last Chance believed that Pope John Paul II was going to come back as the Antichrist.
A shocking truth emerges.
They also follow a strange combination lunar-solar calendar, not the Gregorian calendar. So their Sabbath falls on different days from week to week.
That Yahushua could not have been crucified on a Friday and most certainly was not resurrected on a Sunday. So we've got a conundrum.
In 2018, they took out full-page text-only ads in places like People Magazine and USA Today, saying demons were going to come to Earth disguised as aliens to deceive Christians. But other things they broadcast have more clear overlap with the conspiratorial right. They are staunchly anti-establishment, especially since COVID.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised that the church has failed to stand up to government dictates. I mean, the closer we get to the end, the more the fallen churches will spout the serpent's agenda.
And they even link their flat earth beliefs, not just to extreme biblical literalism, but to their anti-globalist agenda.
The only kind of circumnavigation which could not happen on a flat earth is north-south bound. Both the North Pole and Antarctica are military-enforced no-fly and no-sail zones due to restrictions originating from none other than the United Nations.
World's Last Chance is very dubious, but it's not exactly a cult. Though they do sometimes encourage their members to quit their jobs to dedicate themselves to the ministry, they don't appear to take money from their followers. They've never had what they refer to as an earthly headquarters, as in no sketchy farm. They say their members are spread literally over the four corners of the world. They bill themselves as a web-based ministry, and they have this janky website that looks straight out of the early internet. We're talking retro-futuristic graphics and pictorial backdrops with text-heavy blocks, and a left-hand column of, like, 40 hyperlinks. But if World's Last Chance's website is less than convincing, their shortwave radio broadcast is top tier. It's super listenable, well-produced, and among the slickest broadcasts on American shortwave today. Alan will be the first to tell you it's the religious programming that pays the bills. World's Last Chance's doomsday ministering is the key to it all. The ministry's payments more or less bankroll WBCQ's original operation, all the other frequencies with the free speech programs that still roll in at $50 a pop.
Well, all right, what's on the air now? This is on the air. That's on the air. Radio Trump International is on the air.
And, you know, the polls came out.
Radio Trump International was one of Alan and Angela's shows, which they ran leading up to the 2024 election.
We're Trump supporters. We are. and we've decided to take one of our channels, 5130, and we broadcast Radio Trump International 24 hours a day. Because we can.
Having a backer like World's Last Chance has also made it easier for Alan to keep broadcasting people like Brother R.G. Stair, a man he and Angela came to consider a friend.
What the government did to the beautiful people at the Overcomer, they raided the place like it was a Ruby Ridge.
Alan and Angela told me they don't believe the well-documented allegations of sexual assault.
A bunch of farmers, a bunch of cattle-raising, goat-raising Christian people, you know, tilling the soil, and they pretty much went in there and terrorized everyone.
Stair is dead now. He died in 2021 while awaiting trial. But his followers still live at the compound, and they still send the preacher's reruns to Alan to broadcast around the world all day, every day.
Brother Stair, he helped us keep BCQ on the air, expand. And I always promised that we would keep him on the air no matter what, even if they didn't have money.
Alan knows that a lot of people would have considered him liberal in his early years. He knows that in some people's eyes, he's made a shocking transformation from his days as a peacenik rock and roll pirate. For Alan's part, he says that his philosophy is the same today as it's always been. That people need to hear even the most hateful speech so that they can understand it and resist it.
My political science professor used to say that if you let things fester in the dark, they will fester and grow. But if you shine the light on them, the light will help expunge it and bring it out so people can say, hey, this is wrong. We don't agree with this. You know, you shouldn't do this.
Were you all concerned about having those voices on the air, that it could lead to harm?
Well, we were, but we felt people need to have a right to know, you know. I mean, it's shedding light, you know. I mean, you really got to shed the light.
But I don't think that whole shedding the light thing really worked. Several of the hosts Alan has been running on WBCQ since the early days are still spewing racist, violent rhetoric, like Hal Turner. Even though Alan says that Hal's toned it down since his days advocating that people kill immigrants, Hal's still on WBCQ 5 days a week. And anyway, Alan says, Hal's show gets you thinking.
He gets you thinking. Without being specific.
Here's Alan with Angela on their radio show just last month, recycling tired critiques of rap music.
There are some cultures and maybe even races that are steeped in violence and proud of it.
The kind of music, I believe it makes people
nasty.
Angry.
I mean, free speech, peace, love, and understanding. You know, we talk about
yeah,
those
the understanding
things
too. Has gone too damn far. Whoops. Too far.
Too far.
It has.
In
the
some
understanding
ways,
has kind of just gone too far because everything in the world except for
in some ways, Alan's transformation is not that remarkable. There are plenty of hippies who aged into libertarians or right-wingers, and it's not surprising that a lot of these guys use free speech as a cover for people to say whatever they want without any regard for truth or for consequences. To me, though, the remarkable part of Alan's story is that with shortwave, he's been able to get these hateful voices out to the far reaches of the globe. No board, no meaningful oversight from the FCC. Just him, at his discretion. Thanks in part to Alan Weiner, the demonstrably false, fatalistic, and paranoid programming of World's Last Chance, the hateful rhetoric of Hal Turner, the cultist preachings of R.G. Stair. That's a huge part of what shortwave listeners around the world hear as the voice of American broadcasting. And people are hearing this stuff. Almost every day, Alan gets letters or emails from listeners around the country and around the planet.
Just got one from China.
Really?
Came in this morning. Yeah, on email. They picked up the station. They really liked the programming.
Wow, so this one came in from Australia. Dear sir, madam, hope you had a nice Christmas holiday. This year I have Christmas alone, but listening to your program makes me happy.
From Antwerp Network. Signal was nice and clear.
They have New York, Philadelphia, Australia.
Got a bunch of Russian listeners, too. And here's one from Buffalo, New York.
In Antarctica at the Scientific
Center. Dear sir... on Saturday, September 23rd...
And people are still coming to Alan for a platform, too. Within an hour of me first arriving at WBCQ, Alan's phone rang.
Nowhere. So we pay attention to light.
Yeah, okay. Here, go ahead.
Hello?
As he disappeared out the door, I could hear Alan explaining his simple, well-worn policy to the shortwave curious caller. Free speech radio. Yeah, we'll get you on the air. It's $50 an hour. WBCQ is just one station. There are about a dozen privately run shortwave stations operating out of the U.S. today. And they're almost all owned or operated by religious groups, mostly the Christian right. There is one station out of Tennessee that seems to still mostly play sermons by Pete Peters. He was the white supremacist preacher you heard last episode who helped bring together the far reaches of the right in the 1990s. Like R.G. Stair, he's dead now too, though you wouldn't know it on shortwave. But while these fanatical voices might be some of the loudest on shortwave radio today, there are at least some shortwave listeners who want something else. We know because we asked.
Hello to the people at WNYC.
For several months, we've been running this show on the media on WRMI. It's a shortwave station out of Florida and one of the few that isn't owned by a religious group. And in the breaks, we've been asking people to get in touch, to tell us about their shortwave experience.
As a little boy, I'd often run in to tell my mom and dad about something that they didn't read about until the next day in the paper when it broke.
I was a Peace Corps volunteer, first in Micronesia, then in Sri Lanka. I listened to shortwave radio during both tours, and I have listened to shortwave radio ever since.
There's something about tuning through the static and landing on real broadcast from halfway across the world that just feels cool.
We did get emails from people all over the world, but for the most part, the voicemails we received were from North Americans. And over again, they told us the same thing. Shortwave is a way to get out of your media bubble, to get out of the U.S. and Western-centric news cycle.
It's a way to stay connected to the world, hear different perspectives.
I regularly listen to Radio Dabanga out of Sudan.
I love shortwave because of what it offers to people, the ability to freely access information no matter where you are in the world.
And often they said the broadcasts they hear most don't represent what they love about the medium.
So what do you have today? Mostly, you've got a lot of religion.
Unfortunately, today on shortwave radio, I feel just too much religious programming.
These days, it falls into two categories, Christian preaching and far-right political talk radio-type programming. I don't really like any of that.
Thank you for broadcasting your program.
I did enjoy listening to your program a couple evenings ago.
That's the kind of content we need today on radio, period, let alone shortwave radio.
It's been a welcome change of content versus the typical religion and talk radio that you hear on shortwave.
We have the freedom to do that, but we don't have a lot of cultural programming anymore on shortwave radio.
I don't always agree with your political views, but I still thought it was a very, very cool thing to find you guys. In fact, it made me appreciate the whole thing even more.
Next time on The Divided Dial. It turns out, on these hollowed-out frequencies, pirate broadcasters have been hijacking the airwaves in droves with a more idealistic vision for shortwave. But that vision is getting pushback from a very unlikely source. Not the Federal Communications Commission, but a handful of finance bros who want to wrestle the airwaves away from the public.
Who would have thought that shortwave is now a fabulously valuable to Wall Street?
The fact is now Wall Street is deeply invested in it. And so the question is, what is the FCC going to do about all of this?
On the final episode of this season, it's the battle playing out right now for our shortwaves.
between the pirates and the profiteers. The Divided Dial is written and reported by me, Katie Thornton, and edited by OTM's executive producer, Katia Rogers. Music and sound design is by Jared Paul. Jennifer Munson is our technical director. Fact-checking by Graham Haysha. This series is made possible in part with support from the Fund for Investigative Journalism. Special thanks this week to documentarian Joe Lewis for talking with us about his time at The Overcomer. And special thanks, enormous thanks, to everyone who responded to our call-out on WRMI. It was great to hear back from the shortwaves. We'll catch you next week.